Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
Here we have gathered to celebrate and sing, to find our power and connection with one another and with neighbors we have not yet met. To offer comfort in these tough times, to celebrate the joys we carry as reminders that the world is still full of beauty and life and love. It is good to be together, friends. So good. My forced leave for health reasons this summer afforded me more time than I usually have to dwell on some of the deeper dive news stories of deportations, imprisonments, families torn apart, and more vulnerable groups targeted to have their already compromised rights stripped away. Don't worry, I also read some delightful novels and poetry. But that feeling of constriction, of limitation, of anxiety about who would be next and how things were going to unfold was very real. I know it was and is for many of you, too. I was thinking about all of those things and all of you as I reflected on this month's worship theme of hospitality. It seems that in the U.S., at least, folks in New England and in the southern states share a deep connection with a particular symbol of welcome, the pineapple. When I was a newcomer in Boston in the early 1990s, I quickly lost count of the pineapple motifs on welcome signs, stenciled on walls, woven into the upholstery of colonial-era Unitarian Universalist churches I visited. Definitely not native to New England, but clearly a proud symbol. It was obvious that this stranger needed to learn some history. You may already know this, but the roots of the pineapple symbolism go back to the early 16th century, when colonial explorers from Europe were arriving on the shores of Caribbean islands. And they first encountered this strange-looking fruit that held incredible sweetness. The local islanders, the way they knew about that sweetness was that the local islanders offered pineapples to guests as a sign of welcome. The Europeans were charmed and delighted by the symbol and the fruit. So when they returned to their homes, the exotic symbol of the pineapple signaled the safe return of merchants and sailors, and of course, their wealth that came from the exploitation of those islands and their people. In Europe at that time, very few fruits were available, and they were only available for limited times of the year. The very wealthy were the only ones who could enjoy the fruit. The symbol of exotic excess and being able not just to have it, but to have enough to share it, the pineapple's lore took on a whole nother level on its travels around the world. Over the centuries of global trade and farming, the pineapple became more and more common, or at least easy to access. And its symbol of welcome continues to be important to many of the formerly enslaved communities that initiated that practice of welcome, as well as the many communities it's traveled to since. It seems that whomever discovered the fruit initially and then decided to share it as a sign of hospitality understood something very powerful about the complexities of welcome. We so often show up in a new place with our fascinating flourishes and beautiful exteriors. And we can also come armed with prickly, rough skins when someone comes closer. We can get things wrong in devastating ways, as the colonial explorers did. We can also open up to growth and learning as we deepen relationships. Hospitality in much of the world tends to assume the presence of two parties, a host and a guest. And the host is the one who has both the power and the responsibility to make offers to the guest. The guest's obligation is to work within the host's framework to receive and honor what they've been offered. Being in a position to be a generous host has always been its own kind of status symbol, both as a privilege and as a virtue. The host holds the knife, the plate, the pineapple, the table itself, and their generosity is to be commended. The guest's role is to honor their host by enjoying the fruit, maybe marveling at its sweetness. It's on the host's terms that the things are offered or not offered, and more in our so-called hospitality industry, what is offered depends on the status or wealth of the guest. Airport lounge? Not without proper status. A hotel room that is quiet? That will be an extra fee. Need space on the airplane for long legs, a larger body, a bag, or to breathe? All are graciously available to you for a price. Though our faith communities have tried to offer and practice a different kind of hospitality, to offer welcome and inclusion from deep places of spirit, it's hard even for us to escape the norms we've become accustomed to. We assume the traditional role of host even when we yearn for something different. Our efforts at being inclusive fall down on the limits of our ability to understand our guests, to make our own faith understandable to those who might join us. We certainly try hard, and I wonder if we too might work toward a different frame for notions of hospitality. In 2004, my family made our first journey back as a group to Iran since we left after the Islamic Revolution in 1979. We were visiting family we hadn't seen in over 20 years, and we were feted and feasted at every home we visited. It was a glorious reunion. We were humbled by the luscious mounds of food and the good cheer that greeted us, even when circumstances made us arrive hours later than expected, or a severe sinus infection made us less than charming company. My Iranian father, now of blessed memory, was our tour guide, and we knew him from our life in the U.S. to be someone who was very susceptible to the charms of strangers, especially men who complimented his intellect or his poetry. Often, this worked out well, but in some notable cases, it did not. So, when he announced that the taxi driver who, you know, was randomly in the queue picking us up from the airport in Shiraz was going to return the next day to take us on a private tour to the ancient palace of Persepolis, we were a little leery. Were we going to be taken for a ride in more than the literal sense? My sisters and I exchanged some worried glances and a little dark humor about what our fates might be. But when the taxi driver pulled up ahead of a second car driven by a friend to accommodate our large group, there wasn't any choice but to get in. Again, worried looks. And I held our then one-year-old son close as we buckled in for the hour-long journey. Driving through the countryside in the very aged, though well-maintained cars, all seemed well. The landscape was the beautiful high desert I remembered from my childhood, the sights and smells and sounds taking me into a nostalgic reverie. When both cars pulled over at what seemed to be a random place on the side of the road, and I snapped back into fear. What was happening? Car trouble? My father was our only fluent Persian speaker in the group, and he seemed to think this was perfectly all right. That was a little comfort. We all piled out of the cars, standing on a grassy shoulder of the road, while my father chatted happily with the drivers. Within a few minutes, the trunks of both cars popped open. A big carpet came out and was laid on the grass. Ceramic dishes, real silverware, glass teacups passed around. And then big pots of stew and sheets of traditional flatbread emerged. We were having lunch. A full, real meal prepared by our driver's spouses early that morning and somehow kept warm during the drive. Oh, yes. A private tour here meant that just getting us meant more than just getting us from point A to point B. These men weren't just drivers with a destination. They were hosts offering us a full experience of care. Our frame of reference was the exchange of payment for services from strangers, nothing more, nothing less. And while, of course, those drivers did expect to be paid as agreed, their idea of their job was to provide an experience of comfort and welcome and community. Hassan and Jamshid joined us in conversation over lunch, told us about their families, shared their own memories of the ruins. We were not any longer in separate roles. We were companions for the day, meant to know each other. Humbled by their generosity, embarrassed by my own cynicism, all of our hearts and minds grew a lot that day. It turns out that the Latin root of our word hospitality, hospice, originally meant both guest and host. No difference between the two. Anglican writer Sam Wells points out that the better term for both hospitality and for our efforts in faith communities to offer inclusion is common discovery. It's not you can belong in my club because I'm generous. It's being with you is showing me there's something beyond us both toward which we're heading and to which I'm realizing you might be closer than I am. Let's make our way there together. The holy opportunity isn't to be the one offering the invitation or helping someone become more like us. It is to become sacred companions. Now, if sacred companionship sounds a little too lofty for you, it may be comforting to know that it doesn't have to be that intense, at least not at first. Behavioral scientists Maya Rosignac-Milon and Erica Boothby have found evidence that the strongest connections between strangers are built when we can engage in playful, imaginative banter together, creating a shared world unique to our encounter. The example they share is of a first meeting between two people that begins with a typical small talk question. How was your weekend?
I spent way too much time watching people make tiny food on TikTok.
Whoa, like dollhouse size?
Yes, if you want to learn how to make lasagna in a bottle cap, let me know.
That's hilarious. We could organize a tiny food potluck and fit the entire spread on this coaster.
And we'd need tiny furniture too. Should we ask that guy over there wearing Carhartt to build it?
It starts like that, just a silly little exchange. A shared world is built. Imagination takes flight. Their research has shown that relationships that include building this kind of shared reality feel closer and experience the relationship as more supportive. They're more able to meet the challenges of the world because they already have a practice of creative imagination together. The work of mutual aid that got amazing traction during COVID and now is needed more than any of us might have wished does just this on a really practical level. It blurs the whole distinction between who is guest and who is host, doesn't ask whose territory this is, but asks what can we do in service of what we know to be sacred together. To paraphrase Sam Wells, when we discover this ability to join together in service, we trespassed into a host of discoveries. We're no longer fiercely controlling and patrolling the parameters of belonging and holiness, but deliriously discovering the wondrous surprises of the Spirit's unfolding celebration. Our life in every moment, Wells writes, is a priceless gift. The world is a dazzling theater of wonder. Our communities are not enclaves whose boundaries we patrol. It's a dynamic meeting place where we're all guests and we're all discovering, and everyone is en route to something ever more fabulous. My friends, let us open ourselves to the Spirit's unfolding celebration. Stretch our ideas of belonging into the reality of becoming connected, supported, seen, side by side, building the world we dream. Amen. Our benediction this morning is the words of Andrea Gibson, poet laureate of Colorado and effusive lover of life, who died this summer at age 49. You tilt your head back, you breathe. When your heart is broken, you plant seeds in the cracks and you pray for rain. And you teach your children, there are sharks in the water, but the only way to survive is to breathe deep and dive. May we remember to breathe deep and dive into the possibilities, to water the cracks of our broken hearts, to find a way through this world together. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Amen.
We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.